Buckle up! It's showtime!
It's time for the Green Room with Sean Green.
With the show.
All right, let's do it.
All righty then, let's get started.
And now, for the moment no one's been waiting for.
Dudes, check this out.
Welcome, everyone, to the Green Room. We're doing it live here on SeanTGreen.com, sponsored by Amazon. Of course, you go to SeanTGreen.com, click that Amazon link, and you get savings. I mean, Amazon, just the savings are implied. Tons of good products on Amazon. I feel like the word is out on Amazon, but hey, if you guys click through the Amazon link, that really helps out the podcast. And of course, you can bookmark it so you don't have to click on the link every time. Although I know you're coming to SeanTGreen.com, getting the weekly downloads, good times, Green Room podcast, special guest, Mike Holmes. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
No problem. I feel bad because I kept inviting you on to do the podcast, but, you know, pulling back the podcasting curtain a little bit, I wait to the last second to just send out, like, just basically book guys I know or people that I'm friends with from doing comedy. And I would always hit you up on Sundays, and then you'd have something going on. Like, I wouldn't give you any sort of notice.
No.
So last week, when I tried to pull that stunt again, you're like, hey,
let's just figure out a time. Set a date. I'll be there. I'm here.
Very professional.
Yep. Well, plan ahead.
So now you were just saying you before this, you just watch. You're from Iowa originally, right? You went to school in Iowa, right?
I'm from Iowa, and I went to school in Iowa. Okay. So, yeah, and I just watched their basketball team lose in overtime online on the CBS Game Tracker, the worst way to watch a basketball game, where the ball bounces around on the rim unnecessarily and makes you wait to find out.
Wait, so you were watching it online, or just like the play-by-play? Like, there was no video at all?
There's no video at all.
Yeah.
It's like play-by-play, and then like they have little terrible graphics.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Like, a guy will jump up in the air and the ball will bounce around.
It's even worse.
It's really like 1920s technology that they're trying to force down.
Yeah, I hear you. Just from gambling on sports and whatever, you get in those situations where you're, for whatever reason, you can't watch the game, and then you're just sitting there, like you said, kind of waiting for the feed, and you're just hitting refresh, refresh,
right.
And you're waiting for a field goal to go in or out. Oh, my God. It really is the worst, because you don't even get the entertainment, really, of watching the game. You're just sitting here. It's the most degenerate thing. I'm just sitting here waiting for text to appear to tell me whether or not I won money. It sucks any sort of like entertainment value from sports gambling completely out of it and just leaves you with the degenerate part of just sitting there looking at it.
Yeah, and then if you lose, it's all the worse.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
It's much worse.
Like, what do you just do?
Yeah, at least seeing it, then you can come up with excuses or blame stuff on the refs. The NFC Championship game, I had a bet in on that, and I was freaking out on calls in the ref, even though I wasn't watching the game at all. It was the same type of thing. I was just checking updates on my phone. I'm like, stupid refs, that was a bad call. No idea whether or not it was a good call. Yeah, I went out on a limb and said, these refs don't know what they're talking about. They probably fucked this up. That was, I don't know if you remember that story, the Tim McGonaghy, or I feel like I always pronounce his name wrong, but the NBA ref who was fixing games. Oh, well, actually, it was great because they busted this NBA ref for fixing games. But his whole thing was that he claims he never fixed games. He just bet on games in which he was reffing, which would make him that much crazier of an idiot. Like, he would, if he was really had that, he said he wouldn't make the calls any different, but he would just, he would bet based on inside knowledge of the refs. You know, basically, he knows the NBA refs. He knows who they like, who they don't like, and he made those bets. But, some of these big bets that he made were games that he was reffing, but he maintained that he didn't change any of the calls to help his own outcome.
Sure.
Yeah, which is,
keep telling us that, man.
Which is very unbelievable. And you want to talk about, obviously, if you go to jail, pedophile is the number one guy they're going to take out. But I feel like guy who's costed people money in NBA gambling, not you know, also up there as far as like who they want to get after in prison. I don't know if they have like a separate wing for guys who are involved in sports gambling that cost everyone in prison a lot of money. I'm just guessing.
I would think so. There's probably a good number of people in prison who have lost money in gambling on sports. And
that's fair to make that assumption.
Would love to find someone to take it out on.
Well, when you hear that story like that, it, as a sports fan, it kind of just validates every conspiracy theory or everything in the back of your head of like, wow, they must be in on this, or the NBA is doing X, Y, or Z.
Because the NBA, like, free. I mean, that was like their worst nightmare come possible, you know, come true.
Yeah. No, I mean, that could destroy sports entirely if these refs, you know, end up being corrupt. Yeah, I mean, that's why in the NFL they end up taking a lot of, you know, ex-judge, basically, mm-hmm. I don't know, judges a lot of times because they at least think, like, okay, these guys are somewhat responsible. They're
my buddy's uncle was an NFL ref, and he was a high school principal. So it's same,
yeah,
exactly. Same line.
Well, good times, Mike. Thanks for coming on the podcast. They said you're originally from Iowa. You were born in Iowa.
Waterloo, Iowa.
Waterloo, Iowa. Now, I've never been to Iowa, but what are we talking? Where's
Waterloo? Is in northeast Iowa. Okay. It's right next to a town called Cedar Falls, Iowa. It's like one Waterloo, Cedar Falls, kind of together, one town. It's probably a town of like altogether 125,000 people.
Oh, okay.
It's where the University of Northern Iowa is at.
Nice.
Where Kurt Warner went to school.
Oh, well, there you go.
And the good basketball program there.
A real quick side note, Kurt Warner went to University of Northern Iowa, right?
Correct. And then he bagged groceries at the Hy-Vee grocery store.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
For sure.
The story of Kurt Warner is that how he went from, you know, bagging groceries to becoming Super Bowl quarterback. First off, if I was Kurt Warner, that's pretty embarrassing because you went to college, you had some sort of college degree, and also I feel like that's on the management at the grocery store. You can't find a better job for Kurt Warner than bagging groceries.
I feel like he's
at least stock boy.
I think it was
he's
like
an athletic guy.
I think it was like a cushy position they gave him there because I think he was also quarterbacking the Iowa Barnstormers the same time as.
Oh, all right.
It was like one of those things where
you're a comic store.
Right. I'm a quarterback, but I'm also, you know, still bagging groceries. So.
You don't see that a lot, a professional quarterback who also has to have a day job.
Right.
You see that a lot more in the comedy world. All right. Wait, Iowa Barnstormers, is that like a semi-pro team?
They were an arena league, football league.
Nice. He was in the arena league and then eventually made it in the NFL.
I think NFL Europe and then NFL.
Yeah. NFL Europe, that for some reason didn't work out.
That's weird.
Yeah, I don't know. It's probably just arguing over football, the term football, calling it football. They didn't like us coming over there explaining the proper way to play football.
Right.
I feel like every time, you know, Los Angeles is kind of a metropolis, you run into people from Europe here visiting, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I get no argument. Like, I go out of my way to start an argument about why football is better than soccer every single time. I make sure to explain that it's called soccer. I don't know what it is. I have this chip on my shoulder that I don't like that people are trying to push soccer. I'm as if football needs it. Like, football is doing
well. They're both doing well. That's the thing. Is that everyone?
It doesn't need my word-of-mouth campaign of just badgering people visiting on vacation.
They're willing to argue on it. They're happy to argue with you.
I just like playing the role of basically what they expect in an American, like, oh, drunk guy who just won't shut up about football. I like playing that role. I feel comfortable doing that. I don't mind, you know, coming off as xenophobic. I'm open to that, you know, even though, hey, I'm cool with other countries. But it's still fun to play that up when people visit from Europe. So, Northeast Iowa.
Northeast Iowa. What else? Waterloo, it's where they make John Deere tractors.
Oh, nice.
That's the big employer. Do you know who Dan Gable is?
Dan Gable. No, I don't.
Dan Gable is the greatest. He's the Michael Jordan of wrestling.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Okay.
He's the greatest wrestler of all time, and then he was the greatest wrestling coach of all time.
Nice.
He coached at Iowa when...
Greco-Roman.
Back in the day.
Now, did you ever wrestle?
No, absolutely not. I can talk about it for hours, but
yeah.
I don't.
Cement jobs. I wrestled for a while.
Did you?
As a kid, and... I was never very good overall in sports, But yeah, I had a little bit of a window there where I was like, all right, in wrestling, and then just really fell off the map. But I do remember, I think I was in fourth grade, wrestling at the 90-pound weight division. And, you know, this is like right around Title IX coming out. They had a woman, okay, they had a girl that I was scheduled to wrestle. So, you know, quite the quandary of, what do I do here?
Right.
I can't lose to the girl. I think I remember going in and thinking like, oh, I'll take it easy on her. And then she was pretty good. And our team needed the point, so I ended up pinning her. It was one of my few career pins. But fireman's carry, that was a big move of mine. But it sounds like you're describing in Iowa a lot, you know, similar to my hometown. Bethlehem, same kind of thing, you know, 100,000 probably between, you know, it's next to Allentown, kind of a bigger city, also a huge wrestling area, like Lehigh, collegiately is always up there in wrestling, and Lehigh Valley in general is like a big wrestling hotbed.
Sounds similar. Bethlehem's like it's a steel town, right?
Yep. Well, it was a steel town.
Until
the Japanese or Indian, I think it was mostly India, really, kind of undercut American steel because... Yeah, it was one of those things where basically, hey, union steel workers at the time were making like $17 an hour, get 6 weeks paid vacation. Like the union was really strong. And so, you know, the labor costs were through the roof. And then India comes in, starts making steel, paying these guys like, you know, 50 cents an hour.
Right.
You can't compete.
Yeah, it sounds similar though. Like it's a good wrestling town. People
yeah.
with
yeah, I feel like you need to, yeah, exactly. You can't,
chip on your shoulder.
Yeah. You can't have like a city like Los Angeles be a good city for Greco-Roman wrestling. No. Just there's something. You need some psychology. You need guys.
An angry father who works in the factory and is tough as nails who comes
Cold
home.
Cold weather. You need to be inside in the winter just doing nothing.
Yep.
Sitting around.
Fighting your brothers and beating up the kids across the street.
So now you grew up in Iowa. What? How would you describe your kind of growing up? Were you a jock? I mean, you've obviously talked a little bit.
I played a lot of sports. I guess you could say I was a jock, but I wasn't. I mean, I didn't. I played like basketball as like my sport pretty much, and then my periphery sports were not like golf and tennis and table tennis. So I wasn't like a football player kind of jock, but I did play a lot of sports.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's a weird term, jock, because
in my head it means dumb jock, like.
And it implies that you're really good, and you know, I guess football and some of the other sports that maybe more associated with that. But yeah, it is funny. Like I talk about playing sports in high school or stuff like that, or, you know, playing sports growing up, and they're like, oh, you must have been such a jack. And I had the same reaction of like, no, like I was around sports a lot and I liked sports and spent a lot of time messing around with sports, but I didn't, consider myself a jack.
Right. Same thing. But.
Sorry, I totally blanked on my next thought there. It happens in podcasts.
All right, we'll get through it.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. So, not really a jock, playing some sports. Were you good at school?
I was good at school up until, like, later in high school when I started skipping class and being a fuck up.
Yeah.
But that was until, like, junior, senior year in high school when I kind of just got sick of school. But, yeah, elementary school, junior high.
You knew what was up.
I was getting...
Now, what were you? What kind of shenanigans were you getting into in high school, like junior, senior year?
Oh, all kinds of trouble. Skipping class, a lot of vandalizing.
Nice.
A lot of stupid, like, you know, in the wintertime, go out with like winter gloves on and just walk up to people's, like, if they had like a light post in their front yard, punch out all the panes of glass on the lights. A lot of, and then, you know, then we got cars, and then it was, you're just a wider area that you were vandalizing. We did all kinds of stupid shit. We would get eggs and just, like, hide on freeway, like, by the highway and just bomb cars going by. That was a common thing to do. A lot of sneaking out. Good Midwest clean.
Yeah.
Just not too bad fun, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like women don't understand, or they don't have that same kind of gene where once you turn 16, you just want to start breaking stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if it's the testosterone or whatever.
We got into stealing lawn ornaments for a while. That was fun.
But, yeah, I mean, we had some epic stories of, you know, yeah, we used to just drive into people's lawns and then just rev up the engine. Right. And just, yep. like, you know, and at the time, you're like, this is the most fun I've ever had in my life.
Right.
And, you know, you get caught or well, also, I think before you, like, have your own place, your appreciation for stuff just isn't there. Like, you right. can't – you can't really fathom what it would be like if someone just came by and smashed your shit up.
right.
Like, on your side, you just think, like, oh, this is really funny to just break shit. Who cares if I take their – the bench they have outside their porch and then just throw it in their – above ground pool, like that's kind of funny.
But... No, I was with a guy one night. We were driving around, busting out shit, and this dude took it too far. Took a baseball bat, walked up to somebody's picture window, like the size of that flag like on your wall, yeah. and put a baseball bat through it. And that was like, oh, okay, this. And that's the same thing you're talking about, like. A, that just scared the shit out of whoever lives there. They thought, I'm sure someone drove by with a shotgun and blew their window out as far as they know.
Yeah, exactly.
We just ruins their week, at least.
Yes.
It could ruin their year. Who knows?
Well, I remember the one guy, I drove through his lawn, and I got busted. So I had to write, I had to come over, I had to bring him, like, fertilizer, grass. This is, like, something worked out with the cops. And I had to write a... letter of apology to the That's guy the for driving through his yard. And oh man, in hindsight, I wish I would have made a copy of that letter mm-hmm. or something, because it just must have been like, dear sir, I apologize for driving through your lawn. That was unnecessary.
It was a terrible idea. I can't believe I thought it would be fun.
I'll never let this happen again.
Right.
And now, like, I'm a guy, you know, even though I've never owned a home, I do like having a yard that's taken care of. Or even when I was at, you know, different places, like, I would just buy some seed and, like, make sure the lawn's really nice, kind of anal about the lawn. So if I saw some 16-year-old kid drive through my front lawn, I would have to murder him.
Oh, God.
And it's, you know what we used to do? You know those, like, auto shoppers and stuff like that? We uh-huh. would just go to, you know, whatever the grocery store is, and then just get – basically just take the entire display rack of auto shoppers right. and then just go and just drive around and throw them out the window.
Feather the town with the auto shopper.
Tie people's trash cans and then just drive around dragging the trash cans.
Because
they would,
fun.
Yeah, their metal trash cans especially. Like, they would start sparking and they would just make tons of noise. And it just – yeah, it doesn't occur to you that –
No, the first time you figure out that you can hit a trash can with your car and it doesn't cause that much damage is pretty eye-opening in terms of the fun you can have.
We had a couple good ones. Well, one we like to do, or we did a couple times. This is, you know, right when VHS cameras were becoming, you know, just affordable enough that maybe mm-hmm. one kid's family had them or whatever.
Right.
So we'd drive around and film some of these antics. We did a, like, around our hometown, there were a lot of, like, narrow roads, like, narrow tree-lined roads. So we would drive around and make like a fake arm and have it out the window. and then just like have it get hit by a tree. And,
oh,
like,
that's
have
great.
I mean, I don't know if, you know, people would just honk. And I think people are just generally pissed off. Like, right. I don't think anyone really felt that this person's arm actually got ripped off. They're just mad that we're fucking around filming a fake arm.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I remember one of the classic ones, though, was we were just driving through someone's yard and we... You know, those basically those like, hey, you know, home for sale, home realty, whatever. There was like a metal one, and my buddy just ran right over it. I just never, I'll never forget the sound, just like smack. And we're like, yes, this is so great.
I remember people would go around and like take a bunch of those and then just go put like 50 for sale signs in somebody's front yard. That was a big thing to do. A lot of making your own fun.
Yeah, exactly. Just pure shenanigans. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I don't know if the kids still do that. I'm sure.
I don't know. I feel like a lot of that's gone. You want to talk about what the internet has done. I feel like if I was 16 and just had access to pornography 24/7 or Facebook, Twitter, like all that stuff, I feel like my desire to go out and smash random stuff might go down. I don't know.
It might. The other problem is it might not go down, and then it would just be recorded and put on YouTube.
True. Like maybe. Like maybe they're
still doing it now. There's just more dangerous layers involved.
Yeah. Maybe social media is kind of feeling it because, like, your buddies egg a house pretty good. They take pictures of it. They send it over to you. Now you got to kind of up the ante. So maybe it almost adds to it.
Let's hope so. I'd like to imagine
a world, Mike, where kids aren't too jaded to go out and smash stuff. You know, they enjoy the simple blue collar values of smashing up people's places for no good reason. Our one buddy, we had a couple of people who worked at this local grocery store, which is, if you're, you know, teenager looking to cause trouble, having a connection at a produce section is a gold mine, because we would just roll up there and he would just unload, like, you know, 96 count boxes of eggs. And I think we realized things had gotten out of control when someone threw a pineapple through a guy's window.
Ooh, wow.
Would you talk about the guy, your buddy, smashing someone's window with a bat? I feel like a pineapple, that's got to make you think, like, all right, someone's sending me a message. You know, what kind of random person?
This has to mean something.
I know that trip to Hawaii meant, right. Are you cheating on me?
Did you not tip at that Hawaiian barbecue place we went to? You didn't tip, did you? God damn it.
There's got to be a bigger meaning to a pineapple going through a window. Yeah, I mean, just randomly terrorizing people, probably not a good idea. But, you know, I guess it all worked out. I'm a sane individual.
Mm-hmm.
And
got it out of your system.
Yeah, exactly. Guys just have that, I don't know. It's the same thing with, like, early on, you want to burn stuff. You want to play with fire. I don't know. Maybe it's a testosterone thing, because I feel like women, their shenanigans or stuff they kind of experiment with isn't a lot. Like, they don't have that destructive smash stuff up gene or the fire gene as much.
No, I've never come across it. Yet when the fire kind of goes away around the same time that, you know, I think it's probably like realizing that you have the strength to not break things that you don't just need to use matches.
Well, I think it's just as soon as you get your own place, too. Like, once you go to college and you have your own place or whatever, you're living out of the home, and then, like, stuff gets broken or you have to fix stuff, then it's like,
oh man,
I just ruined some, like you said, I ruined someone's week, probably their month, because probably they're trying to go to sleep, trying to get some shut-eye for a job they hate, and then they're worried about a pineapple coming through the bay window. Like, there's got to be some psychological damage there. So now you, high school, so sounds like typical high school. What do your parents do? What do they...
My dad is a lawyer, and my mom is a school teacher. She's retired now.
Okay. So now you come from big family?
No, I have one older sister.
One older sister? All right. Mm-hmm. So you're the little brother?
I was the little brother.
So your sister, was there, like, bullying your sister, push you around? Like, what's the age difference?
She's 3 years older. We fought a lot. Yeah, we fought pretty much, you know, from adolescence all the way till she graduated high school. And then she left the house, and then I missed her, and then our relationship was good after that. But up until when, you know, as long as you're still living under the same roof,
things get a little cramped.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially you're trying to figure out your own stuff, then you got a big sister trying to boss you around.
I had big sis, and she was super smart, valedictorian, so I always had to live up to that. But that was fine.
Your sister got all straight
My
A's.
Sister got all the straight A's. Yeah, so I was the
see, I was the
disappointing bad child.
See, I was the oldest, and yeah, I held my shit together. But also, my parents really busted my chops a lot harder than my younger brother and sister, because I kind of paved the way of getting in trouble, getting disciplined, that whole thing. So then, by the time my brother rolled around, it was like, oh wow, you know, it's way easier on him than it was on me. So what was your game plan in high school?
My game plan in high school.
Yeah, if we asked a 10th grade Mike Holmes or like 11th grade Mike Holmes,
what
are you going to do with your life? Where do you see yourself going?
Well, 11th grade Mike Holmes is coming to the horrifying realization that he's not going to be a professional basketball player.
Yes.
By 11th grade, it had totally sunk in. I had gone to like AAU summer camps and seen the writing on the wall. around that same time, I also was into comedy. I wrote a column in the school newspaper. I did all kinds of anything I could do in school, I would try and make it funny. And that was around the time that ESPN was getting very funny, that they were really starting to get into comedy more instead of just being about sports. And so that was what I wanted to do when I was leaving high school, was to be a SportsCenter anchor.
Yeah, that's some of the commercials for ESPN are up there as far as like the funny stuff. Like,
that new one with, I guess it's not that new now, but the who's the NFL guy? John Clayton.
Oh yeah, John Clayton with the ponytail.
Oh, that's my favorite. That's one of the funniest commercials ever.
Yeah,
and they have numerous. This is SportsCenter is great. So when I went to school, I went to my freshman year. I went to the University of Missouri because they have a really good broadcast journalism school. And that's what I went there intending to do.
So you went University of Missouri?
For 1 year.
1 year, and then what happened?
I partied way too much and did poorly one semester, and then even worse the next semester.
And then what? Did you flunk out?
Or? Oh, yeah, I flunked out. And then I went back to Iowa and had to go to – that was, you know, very not humiliating, but
– humbling?
Humbling, yes.
Now, what's the conversation – like, I was able to party, I felt like, a decent amount, and, yeah, it was the same type of thing. Like, my parents were so up my ass that I wouldn't, like, I just don't think I could physically not end up doing good, or, like, I was so terrified of not doing well that I ended up, you know, doing all right or doing whatever to get by. What was it, like, what was your mindset back then? Like, hey, I'm going to figure this out, or you were just kind of overwhelmed by the college experience?
Both. I think I always had dumb optimism that I'll figure things out. I still have that, and that's still maybe not a good thing. But just overwhelmed by the college experience. Not my last 2 years of high school, like I mentioned earlier, I skated, I skipped tons of classes, I got bad habits, partying too much. And so all that did not set me up for success. And then I got overwhelmed, I'd fall behind. And then whereas in high school I could fall behind and go in and talk to the teacher and everything would be okay. In college I was screwed and there's no one I could talk to. And then all of a sudden like I had a very bad habit of like, oh, I'm doing terrible in this class. That's not good. And then all of a sudden I don't know what to do. I skip the next class. Now I'm failing two classes. And oh my God, you know, and then it just snowballs. So then I went back home to Iowa for –
Now, what was your parents' take? Was your dad super pissed or they
– No, they were not super – they were pretty – they were super cool actually.
Oh, okay.
Like they were the opposite of pissed. They were very cool. And I went home and I went to junior college in my hometown and I got good grades. I got corrected all the mistakes I made. And Missouri. So after like a year and a half of that, I went to the University of Iowa.
Okay, so how old are you when you – so you're basically a junior, University of Iowa?
Yeah, well, I was basically junior. I was about 20, 21.
Then, and this the plan then is still, hey, I want to be a SportsCenter anchor. Broadcast journalism.
No, by then I kind of already wanted to do stand-up, but it was just – stay in school and kind of get a degree and figure it out. But then I was a communications major for like a semester. And I'm not killing it at the University of Iowa either. old habits die hard. And I'm a communications major for a minute. And then I switched to a theater major. Because by then I was like, okay, I think I want to get into this comedy
stuff. Started getting a taste
of
the performance.
And so I want to get a taste of the performance stuff. And then... through a friend, there was an open mic, a weekly comedy show in Iowa City, and their MC, they had an opening for their MC, and one of my buddies introduced me to Mike Bridenstine, who's a comic.
Mike Bridenstine, yep.
And we started talking about doing stand-up, and he ended up becoming the MC at the club, but that's sort of how I got into doing stand-up, and I met Brido, and then... he was graduating and moving to Chicago, and so after 2 years in Iowa City, I was still at least a year away from graduating with a theater degree, and instead of doing that, I just said, screw it, I'm going to do stand-up comedy. My parents have wasted enough money. I've wasted their money
enough. Now, how does that conversation go? Do you just tell your parents, hey, listen, this stand-up's not working out? Is there any back and forth? How does that go, the I'm just retiring from college conversation?
A lot easier than I had it all in my head about all these things I'm going to tell my dad. And I had done some open mics in Iowa, and I had a lot of success in Iowa on the comedy scene. And so I was like, I can do this. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to move to Chicago, and I have a friend that I'm going to move there with, and my sister was living there by then. And so they were like, all right, good. You know, get a job.
Your parents sound very supportive. I like
they
that.
They are very
sound
supportive.
Pretty sweet. So you moved to Chicago and then started hitting the ground running, doing stand-up. What kind of jobs were you working out in Chicago?
I worked for the Sherwin-Williams Paint Company for all 4 years that I lived in Chicago. I found a job there like a month after I moved there. I thought it would be temporary, and I just stayed there. They were super cool and super flexible with stand-up and stuff like that.
That's great. Well, now what, like...
So I know more about paint than I ever set out to.
What kind of problem customers do you have in the Sherwin-Williams, in the paint world?
Oh, the problematic customers are the women who come in and want you to pick out the color schemes for their apartments because they think that since you work at a paint store that you're an interior designer, whereas I'm just a 22-year-old college dropout who thinks he's funny, who mixes paint in the back. I don't know what the hell's going to look. Brown. No? Light brown. I don't know. Green? You don't like? Of course you don't like green. I don't know. So, yeah, those people are the worst. Pushy Romanian painters I learned in Chicago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there were some Romanian painters that I had to deal with a lot.
No, so wait, what real... is, like, Romanian, what, do you try to hardball you? What,
no,
what's
they
going...
very, they're like, they thought they were rock stars. Like, like, yeah.
They're like house painters, though, right?
Well, yeah, but they run the company, and they have guys that work underneath them, and they don't have to do that, you know. And where's my paint? Jim said the paint would be ready. Where's the paint? You know, like, real fucking assholes. Surprisingly, that, you know, there would be that many egos in the paint industry, but there are.
Yeah, that does sound shocking. I always remember when I worked construction that the paint guys were also – I felt like they were very – I mean, for construction workers even, I felt like they were the slow guys.
Yeah.
Like, mentally.
No, for sure.
I feel like you could see the damage done from inhaling paint fumes for an entire life just by
– Absolutely.
I remember the one time I came – showed up at the house, or, you know, the house. I used to drive a truck for a construction company, basically, like, dropping off stuff at the different job sites. Show up, I'm bringing some stuff in, and all the guys are, like, beaming ear to ear. And I'm like, all the workers are, like, really happy. I'm like, what's going on in here? And I was like, it's not Friday. Like, one of these guys, like, they look noticeably happier, and they had that kind of, like, look in their face that something good was going on. I walk into the house, and they had basically sealed up the entire house and were lacquering the entire house.
Oh,
so
Jesus.
They basically vaporized the house. What's that term when you – basically, they hotboxed a house
with
lacquer thinner.
Oh, my God.
You walk in there, and I'm like, oh, my God, guys. Like, you have no – you must have no brains anymore.
Yeah, I'd see guys like that. Just.
Dude, the construction industry is hilarious too for just the brutal honesty. I remember two of the main paint guys. They were twins. They were brothers, and they called them the Monsters. And I was like, oh, they're real hard to deal with, huh? Like, you know, trying to figure out what the nickname was all about. And the one guy was just like, no, their faces are horrible looking, like monsters. I was like, oh.
A lot of creativity went into that one, and just pure meanness.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, for, you know, your typical day-laboring construction
guys. At
least,
like, name them after an ugly movie character or something. You know, put some.
I convinced myself there was something in the translation I wasn't getting, but they're like, no, just ugly faces like monsters.
Oh.
All right. So now you're plugging away here in Chicago, laying the groundwork, laying the paint. When do you decide to make the move to Los Angeles?
Well, I was doing a thing in Chicago, a website. We had a thing called blurds.com back in the day.
Blurds?
Blurds, B-L-E-R-D-S, where we made, like, we made stand-up videos, like, well, the director of Mashup on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
That started as his idea on Blurds.
Oh, okay.
Like, filming stand-up as sketches, basically. So
yeah, no, I mean, that's...
I was doing that with a lot of guys, and... A lot of those guys were starting to make the move, and I was living with Bridenstine at the time, and he was talking about moving, so it just, enough of my friends moved that it was sort of either go to New York, go to LA, or stay here and be left behind, which didn't sound appealing to me.
Yeah, the idea of being left behind. No, that's not a. Yeah, no one wants to do that. So you come out to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
What's like for an Iowa guy, Chicago guy, Midwest guy? What's your take on how long you've been out here for?
I've been out here 5 years now.
Now, what's your take on Los Angeles?
Los Angeles, I love it. I did not love it when I first moved here. I was super overwhelmed, even coming from Chicago. I thought,
really?
Yeah, like just the enormity of it. Like Chicago, you can live in like your neighborhood and like walk to everything, or and take $5 cab rides everywhere. And it's, even though you're in a, you know, the third biggest city in the country, you still feel like you live in this little neighborhood.
Yeah,
you know. And when I moved here, I was like, Jesus, this is like living in the state of Iowa. Like, you know, it's like living in Northeast Iowa, but it's your town. Like, to me, that's what it's like.
No, yeah, it is crazy because, yeah, Los Angeles, it's a city, quote unquote, but really it's just this giant sprawling suburbs that, it's crazily spread out. And, it is overwhelming. I mean, I don't know, like, were you able to immediately find a job? What was your...
Well, as I mentioned before, I was an employee of the Sherwin-Williams Paint Company, and they have branches out in Los Angeles. So I worked at the store in Westwood, which was interesting.
Now, interesting how?
Just different, a totally different experience from the Chicago store. There's different rules and regulations on paint here. Different customers, different employees. I had a manager who I just hated. This guy named Crazy Herman, who I can talk to you for.
Hey, Crazy Herman, he sounds like a great manager.
Oh, he's crazy. His words, not ours. So Crazy Herman drove me crazy for a while until he got fired for saying racist things in front of a customer.
Wait, what do you have to say to get fired from a paint store?
He was stocking paint on the floor. Actually, sandpaper that was on a lower shelf, and so he's sitting down on the floor stocking the sandpaper. And a customer walks in named Thomas, and he walks up to the register and asks our other manager for a quart of oil-based black paint.
Mm-hmm.
Herman hears him ask that. Herman recognizes his voice as Thomas, who's a friend of his. What Herman doesn't know is Thomas has his black friend with him.
Oh.
And so Herman, who was very funny, super funny dude, shouted out, "No, you'd have to go to South Central to find oil-based black paint." Fired that afternoon.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was one of the – I wish I still had my old flip phone because the Crazy Herman has been terminated text stayed in my phone long after I quit working there.
Wait, you got a text from the owner?
I got a text from one of my coworkers. I worked the afternoon shift, and it happened in the morning. So
Crazy Herman. I don't know. Obviously, that's in poor taste, but I feel like I've been to Home Depots and Lowe's, and I don't know. I feel like you could hear some crazier stuff.
For sure. No, that's the other thing is he did other things that were. In my opinion, he should have been fired for much sooner than the. But Sherwin-Williams is a Fortune 500 company. Dude called corporate offices and lawyered up, and like he was pissed.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. So they didn't
the
know,
guy. Oh, so the
guy who.
I guess it wasn't like someone else in management hearing. It was the guy complaining.
It was the customer complaining to the Sherwin-Williams regional office.
It's got to be an interesting phone call.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, can I speak to the? The racial slur department of right. Sherwin-Williams.
Hold, please.
Racial slur.
Sure, there is one.
Satisfaction hotline.
Yep.
I got to imagine that's pretty interesting. So now, what's your end game for comedy? What do you see yourself ultimately? What's the ultimate goal?
I don't ever want to stop doing stand-up. I don't know if I'm going to be a famous stand-up comedian. I'd love to get a television writing job.
Yeah,
if I do that for 25 years and do stand up on the same, you know, that would be
sounds like a good gig.
That would be a perfectly good gig for me. So, I'm writing books. So
now, yeah, you were talking about this before. What kind of books? And
I published just a little joke book called Misquoted. It's really short. It's almost like a pamphlet. And it's just like I take quotes and then I add a joke on the end of them.
Like famous quotes or?
Yeah, like sayings. Like, the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. And then the tag is, unless you live in Arizona, then your neighbor has weird rock landscaping. So I was doing a job a while back writing for an ad campaign for Hungry Man TV dinners.
Yes, I remember hearing about that.
And when I was doing that, I had to write jokes as Davy Crockett, tweeting and writing Facebook updates about things happening in sports every day. And I had to do that 5 days a week, 8 hours a day. And so I ran out of jokes to come up. You know, you can only make like so many jokes about the news, and then you can only make so many like Davy Crockett Alamo jokes and so many Davy Crockett coonskin hat jokes, and then you just run out. And so I started, that was one of the things I would do, is I would look up quotes online and then...
Oh, and then just throw it in and then throw a little tag on
Davy's words of wisdom. And so I just totally bastardized that idea and turned it into a small book. And that's called Misquoted. And then the other book I wrote is a bigger book, and it's called My Waterloo Days. And that's a collection of short stories all from my childhood in Waterloo.
Oh, okay.
And they are all available on homespuncontent.com.
Nice. And so take us through, like, what's the – how do you self-publish? How do you get a book out there? Like, you just want to do it yourself. What's kind of the end game?
Well, there's – you can e-publish, which I did with both of my books, which is real easy to do. You just have to – you can look up online, learn how to format it, and then there are different websites that will – take your formatted file and then compress them into all the different forms of files for all the different, you know, ebook sellers.
Oh, okay.
So that in itself is pretty easy to do. You have to buy ISBN numbers, which are like, and barcodes, which is like the little number you see on the back of a book. It's like a book serial social security number. So you have to do that and register your books. That's kind of a pain in the ass, but not too difficult. And then the other thing I did is I made hard copies of each of my books and then just printed them at print shops here in town.
Oh, nice.
And that was sort of a nightmare to do.
Yeah.
Because you have to figure – I was an idiot and I didn't like, maybe I could buy software for this. I was like, I'm just going to learn how to lay it out my own with 50 different Word documents and then figure out what – you know, because what's on the cover of this page is on something – you know, half the other page is completely different.
Oh, wow.
And then you have to know exactly how long the book's going to be so that you're...
You can get it all dialed
in. Get it all done. It
sounds like a huge fucking pain in the ass.
It's a huge fucking pain in the ass, and that's why I'm sure there is software that you can get to do it. And that I will totally look for next time I do it.
Well...
So I want to keep doing that. That's been a lot of fun. And now I've learned how to do it. I've got the website all set up, and I've, you know, learned the process, so...
Yeah, no, I mean, that's all... It's... Yeah, I mean, that's the awesome power of the internet, is that you have the ability to create your own kind of stuff. And, yeah, it's interesting to think that I feel like, you know, we're not too far away where instead of talent agencies, you're just going to have the internet. And basically, you know, whoever's the rising star or whatever is just going to be determined via social media or, you know, basically the people deciding, hey, this guy's really popular, blah, blah, blah. Like, you won't really... need that other element of promoting, because it's all just going to be done online, and it's all going to be done via, you know, like some sort of digital democracy of just people finding out guys' stuff that they really enjoy and sharing it and just growing a fan base that way.
I think, you know, more people are doing that. I think Louis C.K. is doing a lot of that right now.
And yeah.
He's sort of...
Yeah, no, I mean, just the idea, like you said, like Louis C.K., why would he pay some other company to film his special and edit it? Like, he can do all that himself and just put it on his website, charge $5 a pop, sell 200,000.
Keep it all for himself.
Yeah, exactly. Seems like a great business model.
Absolutely.
Have you kept up, I don't know, I'm fascinated with this whole Manti Te'o story.
I've kept up on it. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I guess I got to check online, but I guess now they're releasing some of the voicemail messages.
I've heard three of them.
Okay, now what was your take?
It sounds like a girl. Absolutely. I would be fooled by it. I would not be fooled into a months-long relationship with a girl online who I've never seen. I don't think I would fall for that, but listening to the voice that I heard on those messages, have you heard it?
No. But it sounds like they were either using a girl or the guy was pretty decent at faking this girl's voice.
I read somewhere that he's like a trained vocal artist or something.
Well, you know what? I think really what it's going to come down to is Manti Te'o didn't want to admit to the fact that he masturbated probably to this guy's voice, because that I think that's really. If you're having – okay, you're Manti Te'o, you know, they asked him if he was gay. He said, far from it. People were reporting that he had all these other girlfriends or chicks he was hooking up with at Notre Dame. So
that's, yeah, that's something I would want to know about is,
yeah,
why is the big man on a pretty damn big campus?
Right. Just has an online girlfriend.
Right.
I think
no thanks, ladies.
I think he's guilty of exaggerating his relationship with this chick that right. didn't actually end up turning out existing. I think what happened was, this was just some random chick that was like flirting with him and whatever. And, you know, so he played along. He probably had some sort of phone sex or something with her. So
something.
Obviously he's going
to
be really
to keep him into it.
I mean, and I don't know. So he never, or he saw pictures of her, blah, blah, blah. He was probably just playing along with it. I don't know why. It seems like he released the phone records and he really was talking to her for long periods of time, which that sounds crazy to me, but, anyway, so, and like they had chances to meet, but they didn't. I don't know. But at some point, he's got to know either that it was fake, or I think probably what happened was he called this girl, his girlfriend, once it came out that she passed away. You know what I mean? That's
right.
When he basically decided, oh, okay, this was the love of my life. And the press loved it. He got mm-hmm. a lot of attention for it. And he's, hey, this is well, just yeah, some random only chick online that I was talking to. But now, oh, all right, hey, she, you know, turns out she passed away. Hey, this is, you know, I don't think it was as convoluted of like, hey, this is going to be my, you know, he didn't plan it out. This is going to be used for the Heisman. I think it was more just, hey, this chick died. It's a good story. Why not just, hey, I told
this
it once.
This is also happening, too, like, you know.
Yeah.
Because his grandparents or grandma passed away.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, he probably gave an interview about that and then decided to add to his pity party and was like, yeah, and my girlfriend just died.
Right, yeah.
and
then
you know, probably
he
wishes
got a lot of attention for that.
Right.
So he was just like, all right, I'll roll with this.
Right. Oops.
Yeah. Now, as a NFL fan, would you want a guy like, man, does this...
That's the thing. I was
does this
ask
freak
you
out?
I
as
don't
a,
know.
I don't know. Well,
as an organization, would it?
Well, the thing is, Manti Te'o in particular... His whole thing is that he doesn't quite have the size. He doesn't have quite the physical abilities, but at middle linebacker, he showed a ton of leadership skills and like having his stuff together and leading these guys in prayers.
He's a good listener.
Yeah, the same thing you want in an imaginary relationship. He was bringing to the table at middle linebacker, so I feel like that's going to hurt him. I think he's not going to be a first-round pick, and I think it's a combination of his performance in the bowl game and
or
his performance,
his
in, the national
performance in the national championship game was affected by the fact that he knew this big shitstorm was about to come down on him.
I feel like, how can it not?
Yeah.
How can it not? But then again, I think he was also super naive. Like, if he realized what this would... you feel like you got to get ahead of this thing. And that was a and he claimed even, like, 2 days before Deadspin broke it, he was still kind of unsure about what was going on. Even though the lady called...
Yeah, didn't she call him after she died?
And said that she didn't die?
Right.
I would assume they're faking right then.
Right.
I don't know. Have you ever seen... Now, everyone is... You know, comparing this Manti Te'o story to the movie Catfish or the MTV show Catfish.
I haven't seen the movie, but I have seen a couple episodes of the TV show.
Now, what's your... I'd never seen the movie, and I just randomly watched the TV show Catfish, and...
Number one, how perfect for them that...
Oh, yeah.
I mean...
Well, and really, you want to talk about conspiracy theories. What's to say that Rene Tuisapiopo, the guy right. tricking Manti Te'o, what's to say he's not in it with MTV Promotions? I mean, I've seen crazier stuff as far as stunt promoting, but... So, the episode I watched, this, like, pretty good-looking chick from Alabama has this boyfriend online, and... You know, he's almost the same type of thing. Like, hey, we have this great relationship. I mean, red flags start popping up really early. I mean, she's 21 years old. She's from Alabama. She's probably a little naive. I mean, as most people 21 years old or people from Alabama. they don't have podcasts in Alabama. It's fine.
No.
The hilarious red flag for me came when she was describing the guy, and he goes, yeah, he's studying to be an anesthesiologist. And I was like, well, this is right out of a Seinfeld episode, first off. And then she goes, he's studying anesthesiology online.
Oh, like, God.
And then they were just like asking her these questions like, oh, blah, blah, blah. He's his sisters? Well, he has sisters. They all died in a car accident.
Oh, my God.
So then you're just like, all right. All right. Clearly, this is just some horny guy. And, you know, it's going to come out that he doesn't look like this. Obviously, he's not going to be the guy he says. Obviously, they wouldn't put him on the show if it was like, and it turned out he was
right.
That guy. I mean, lied about, you know, how big his dick was, but everything else checked out. Like,
and here's his sister's graves.
I don't know. I don't watch the Catfish show enough to know whether they have, like stories where it works out.
All right.
All right. We got to throw them a bone every once in a while. Right. So they show up, and they're there, and out walks, not a guy, a just, like, dumpy 17-year-old chick who's into softball, like, wearing basketball shorts.
Hi.
I was watching it with my girlfriend, and she was, her first reaction was, can't they just put her in a pair of jeans? Like, it was from a fashion standpoint, and as she pointed out, it was hilarious because she herself was wearing basketball shorts, pointing this out. But,
really?
Yeah, there was a little bit of irony there, but obviously she wasn't on camera. And then she came out, and she was like, yeah, sorry. And she was just, like, so nonchalant about it. She's like, yeah, it was me. What do you want to know? Like, she didn't apologize, really. She's like, I guess I'm sorry. And they asked her, like, are you into girls? And she's like, well, I don't know. Not necessarily. But obviously you must be into girls somewhat.
Right.
And turns out, if you guessed it, Mike, she was bullied. And she used this as a tool to get... I don't know. Yeah, I guess I'm from a different era where people got bullied and you just dealt with it.
Right. You fought back.
Yeah, you fought back or you were just bummed out about it.
Or you just moved... You went to a different school.
Exactly. You stopped walking that way to school. You right. took a different... You got on a different bus.
Yeah, I don't understand the bullying. That seems to be... I don't know if it's because of Facebook... Is it because now you can be cyberbullied, so
yeah.
You can't escape it when you go home?
Just drives you crazy. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just, in general, just raising this crazy level of sensitivity that doesn't necessarily need to be there. Or I feel like part of the high school experience, get me wrong, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, is having your ass kicked. Or part
For sure.
of life experience is having your ass kicked, having people say you suck, like... But, like, eliminating that just seems like a bizarre
no,
way
you have to
live.
You have to kick the people's legs out from underneath them every once in a while, because otherwise
right.
they're just going to have egos. And
You've met people who clearly never got punched in the face mm-hmm. or never had anyone say no to them.
Right.
And
they're the
just,
worst people in the world.
you cannot stand to be with them.
No, it's like Francis Buxton.
Now, speaking of lying sports stars, Lance Armstrong came out on the Oprah show. That was a big story past couple weeks here. Lance Armstrong admitting to taking steroids, although, God, it was like a coming clean interview, but then he's also clearly still lying about stuff. Like, he said he stopped taking steroids in 2005, which coincidentally is 8 years, which is exactly how long his ban is from any sort of international athletic event. So he's even lying in his coming clean interview.
Wow.
And he just comes off as such a sociopath to just be able to lie this hard for this many years.
Well, and it's just the thing, you know, when they get into all just the awful person he was to everyone who said he was lying.
Yeah, he just called people fat bitches and
yeah.
sued everyone and just destroyed their lives.
Just destroying people.
How can you destroy someone when you know they're right?
Dude, he should take whatever money he has left when everyone's done suing him, when
exactly.
his 100 million is down to 2 or whatever, and just stay the hell away, go away. Oh, what a piece of trash. How do you...
It's tough.
It's mind-boggling.
It's one thing to take performance-enhancing drugs, and I think, what, out of, like, the 21 people of his 7 Tour de France, basically the top 1, 2, 3, 20 people that had been, like, disqualified or linked to performance-enhancing drugs.
Right.
So, all right, maybe there's something there of literally everyone was doing it, but when you're destroying people's lives like that, that's the insane part. Or... basically taking Livestrong money and using it to kind of lobby against these, like, doping officials or that kind of stuff. That's really
That's the unforgivable part to me. The cheating, people cheat, but like that's the stuff that's like psychopath. Like,
yeah,
you need to go. Like, you're not a good dude.
And as far as like, and the whole thing about this annoys me so much is that it's cycling. No one, we're regular, you know, guys who are sports fans. Can you name another cyclist?
Greg LeMond.
Okay.
But that's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
I mean, I could maybe pull out that reference, maybe one other cyclist, but no one knows anything about cycling. The fact that these Tour de France's are tainted, no one cares because we didn't – yeah, okay, hey, we like the story, fine, or we like that – I think we just like the idea that we as Americans were kicking the French's ass.
That's what we really liked, that we had another –
But did you ever – You know, how many – you said you wanted to be a Sports Center anchor. How much of the Tour de France did you watch ever?
None. I don't know.
None. They would show like two – you know, like 20 seconds of highlights. Lance Armstrong won. All right, cool.
See him on the victory stand. That's about
exactly.
It. You don't...
They covered like Devil Rays regular season games as much as the Tour de France. So that's what drove me so crazy about this story is that they act like people weren't emotionally invested in these Tour de France wins.
Yeah, no one. That's not what people are upset about.
No, they're upset that he's a sociopath, and it's frustrating that he's not coming clean in the Oprah interview, which makes me think he's going to have another sit down interview with Barbara Walters to come clean about the
Probably.
Oprah
it
interview.
Could be a money making thing too. He's not going to sell it all at once.
Yeah, it's part of his complete "I'm an asshole" promotional tour. He just goes from place to place, apologizing, explaining how he kind of cheated, but now he doesn't cheat anymore. It's like, all right, how can you say that with a straight face and expect any sort of credibility? It's insane.
He's amazing.
Well, good times, Mike. Thanks for coming on the podcast,
awesome.
Man. You want to throw out your website again? And
it's Holmespun, HOLMESPUN, content.com.
All right. Check that out. And got any – you do – The 1642.
I do the 1642 show. It's next one's February 17th with Kyle Kinane, Tom Segura, Mike Bridenstine.
Always a good time. It's
good
over
lineup.
At this fun little bar in Echo Park.
Mm-hmm.
1642. That's the actual address.
That's
too,
the
right?
address and the name. So
they got
on
it
Temple
all there
Street.
In one.
It's all right there in one. Beer and wine.
All right. Make sure you check that out. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the podcast. We do it live here every week on SeanTGreen.com.
The Green Room with Sean Green.
Keep up the great work. See you later.
Download archived episodes at 247comedy.com and follow the show on Twitter at Green Room Show.
He should have seen she was really naive. Shit, she was still only 19. And he was many years older. But he seen her walk by in them tight jeans. And he looked at her like, that's my queen. Cause he thought that he could mold her, but it don't work, no.
Larry was a 39-year-old.